back with episode 819 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights. In real time, I believe. I think I'm far enough away from the event horizon.
This is Gary, and unlike Edmund, I'm still right in the same place, Jacksonville.
That's right, and we are back to discuss just a few other shows that we have been watching over the last month. And yeah, I guess that's a good place to start after we do a spoiler warning.
Yes, we will talk about all sorts of things that happened, and big nasty finales, and all sorts of twists. And if you haven't seen these shows, you will be spoiled. But we haven't been here in ages, and there wasn't that much on, so you really should have caught up.
Indeed you should. All right, so let's go ahead and start with the show that we've already referenced, and that would be, the last few episodes of Doctor Who Series 10. And, I think that as I'm looking here at some of the scores, it seems like the season ended on a bit of a high note. What do you think, Gary?
I really don't want to be sarcastic when I say that these final few episodes of Capaldi were some of my favorite ones that I watched. I felt that he was much more active, focused, and not just a bystander to the storyline. I really enjoyed him, and I wish we had had this sort of level of quality and angst and frustration in him that that I did not see earlier in the season. I won't say that I've been wrong in my choice. All I'll say is if there were more like this, I might have had to reevaluate my opinion of him.
How about you, Edmund?
I did enjoy this final run for the most part. Some quibbles along the way, but before we get, I think we're actually talking about the last three. Before we get into that big monstrous two-parter, even that previous episode, going back and doing a little bit of a throwback to the old historical episodes, going back in time. To a major, I guess in this case, sort of relatively minor historical event, visiting the Romans in England in bygone times, and of course them having to deal with some sort of strange multidimensional beings. I enjoyed the setup, and also the sort of classic shout out to the Doctor marshaling the resolve and the forces, the humans stepping up to do what was right after they had unleashed something they shouldn't have. So the Doctor Moore's motivation and inspiration, but not actually fixing things on his own, but getting people in the right place to do it for themselves was quite fun to see. And then we get into this great big ship poised on a black hole, despite some slightly strange openings there, Missy playing around quite a bit with the name of the show and the main character, and yes, may have gotten a little tongue-in-cheek and meta, I still found it to be a lot of fun. What did you think about that, John?
Yeah, I felt that was probably, if I'm looking at the those last three episodes, that scene was so close to the edge. Yes. Of over the top. Moffat has always kind of played that, the title of the show a little more tongue-in-cheek than I think anyone else has ever done. And I think that this was really, him going about as far as he's ever gone. At the same time, it being Missy was probably the only way he was going to get away with it.
Oh, absolutely.
What about you, Gary? Did you think that worked, or was it just a little too on the nose?
No. It all came together pretty well for me. My scores were, even though we're not going through them, were exceptionally high for these last few episodes. So, I was very happy.
Yeah. I think that it was a good ending, and I kind of like what they did with Bill and so forth. I thought that they were going to wind up killing her off. What did you think about the way that they wound up resolving her arc, so to speak?
Oh, that was a total cop-out. Yes. They really should have killed her. That that would have lent a lot of gravity, I think, to the Doctor and some of, you know, and that sense that he can't always, you know, fix everything. And in some ways, he really didn't fix it. It was, you know, it was other things that fixed it. You know, the girl coming from the pool of water, I guess it is. But so he really didn't save her. But yeah, she did end up getting saved. It seemed like a bit of a cheat, much like they had, Clara going off. Someplace else too. At least they're not trapping them in other dimensions anymore. So you have a decent shot if you're a companion nowadays.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem for me was, it could have worked a lot better if they had actually really established that relationship with that young woman and her becoming the pilot way back in the first episode of this season, and if we'd actually gotten a sense of her and Bill having some sort of relationship beyond what looked pretty much just like a schoolroom crush, yes, there's this cute girl who I haven't really talked to, who I don't really get to know, and then she becomes this interdimensional entity, lo and behold, is available to come back and save me at the very end. It really didn't have any emotional resonance for me, and certainly the way they had been setting up this oppressive no-win situation, I really felt I'm with Gary, where I thought they were going to make it a real heavy blow for the Doctor to absorb, and also, which I think, you know, would have certainly played into him perhaps being more and more ready to embrace regeneration than we saw, the other thing I have to mention is it really amused me just now that Gary seemed to be confusing Capaldi with Garibaldi, since certainly in that first episode, it certainly felt like they had Zathras running around that ship.
Yes, it did.
Actually, as we're recording, it is Jerry Doyle's birthday, and I think that's why it was on my head a little bit. Yes. So, yeah.
Understandable then, especially after the last year.
Yes, indeed. But one thing I found interesting was then having that big reveal of yes, it is the John Sim version of the Master, but it did kind of remind me of some of the things that did annoy me about the sort of more maniacal take that they had they gave the Master in his incarnation, and certainly it was really being played up now that they've done such a good job of establishing Missy as this new version of the Master, and certainly the conflict between the two of them was something I never really imagined them coming up with in the past. And I thought of all the sort of strange time paradoxes and things that Moffat has set up. This was actually one of the better ones that he's done. While I certainly agree with some of the comments from earlier in the week about yes, I think Moffat really really has run his course. Certainly on Sherlock, I felt like they've really gone to the well too many times. As far as the end of his run on with the Doctor, I felt like this was a case of setting up a odd situation and what I've come to call the Moffat puzzle boxes that really worked pretty well in the end. This whole idea of actually taking the physics of a black hole and the fact that time runs and completely different speeds depending on where you are on it and using that to drive the plot and this horrific transformation of Bill into a Cyberman, and even the way they were playing with that in the second episode, flipping back and forth between how she saw herself and then how the outside world saw her, was rather nicely done.
Now, you didn't feel that was...
Oh, go ahead. No, I was going to say I actually really liked the fact that they played with that whole thing of Bill's perception. That worked for me, and it actually was doing a great job of underscoring the fact that it was selling to me the fact that she wasn't going to be saved. So for them to kind of go back to, as you said, Edmund, that first episode that would, quite frankly, I'd forgotten all about because it was so forgettable, it did it feel like a cop-out per se? I'm on the fence on that. I liked the fact that they kind of pulled a twist at the end, but at the same time, I go back to, we said it when the episode aired. It was an unearned relationship. So it didn't really pay off here either. But anyway, Gary, you were going to say?
I was just going to say it did seem a little bit of a knockoff of when they had Clara as the Dalek.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that same, she saw herself one way versus the other way. And at least that, it reminded me strongly of that. So at first, you know, it seemed like there was a novelty. And I was like, wait, they've done this before. And then when I, you know, when it clicked on my head, I was like, well, couldn't they come up with something else? But I've heard a lot of people really enjoyed it a lot. So I, you know, I'll keep my criticisms to a minimum.
Yeah, but that's actually probably getting to the point that we were making before where, yeah, Moffat, you're repeating yourself now to a certain degree. So yeah, maybe it is time for him to kind of stop running the same ideas. And one of them is making overly complex time travel stories. I would really like to have just a very straightforward season next time. But we'll see how that goes. All right, well, let's just go ahead and switch gears a little bit then. I'm just going to mention here for myself, the first half of the third season of Fear the Walking Dead. As I'm looking at the scores that I put in, it is coming in almost always towards the bottom of the list. And it doesn't surprise me that that's happening because this show is rapidly becoming an also-ran, where it's just, if it wasn't running in the summer when there's almost nothing else on, this would be a show that I wouldn't be putting a lot of time into because there's other things that would be higher on my list. As it is the last thing every week that I watched. So it doesn't surprise me because, yeah, it's just not doing anything with what it's being given. Even as they make some of the characters more interesting, they don't do interesting things with them. And boy, when I thought that some of the episodes of Supergirl last year were really beating you over the head with messages, these guys went even less subtle.
Oh, geez.
They introduced some, you know, Native American, First Nations, whatever you'd like to call them, characters, and they made this whole subplot about evil racist ranchers versus the Native Americans. And if that feels like something like that on The Walking Dead would fall completely flat, you're right. it made some of those Supergirl episodes seem incredibly subtle by comparison. It just didn't play well for me.
Mm.
So it's unfortunate. This show, I was kind of hoping it would be, it would kind of prove people wrong in the end, but it just seems to be digging a deeper hole for itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I do want to mention, yeah, I have not been watching, have felt no desire to watch, but, part of that, does relate back to that, me finally watching Deadwood that I mentioned at the beginning of the week. Cause the other, actor on there who, I then have seen in later shows, is Kim Dixon. And her work on Deadwood as Joni Stubbs is just so much head and shoulders above what they are making her go through, on this show, at least what I saw in the previous seasons, that meant I had even less incentive to watch, because although it did amuse me that seeing on one of the recent reviews of for Fear the Walking Dead that she has been reunited with Charlie Utter, or the actor who played Charlie Utter, which I thought was a nice and amusing little shout out to their Deadwood past, though it I am sure whatever situation they were in completely pales in comparison with their rather wonderful, quirky and warm relationship on that show.
Yeah, that pretty much says it. Edmund, this last season of Orphan Black is spooling out this summer.
Yes.
And we've had probably about half the episodes by now. I'm a little bit behind week, of course. But the first five episodes have spooled out.
Yes.
And just in general, what are your thoughts on how they're doing with wrapping this series up?
I'm okay with it. I don't mean to sound so hesitant. But certainly in terms of the process they started last year of cutting back on all of the intrigues and plot within plots and dyad and throwing in Castor and all those things that were just overly complicating it. They have certainly cut back on that but in a way it feels like they've almost done it too much. I mean, bring everything down to the island, bringing in this, you know, this new mastermind character who, yes, I know it's not his name, but I still keep thinking of him as P.T. Barnum. It feels to a certain extent, it's also a case of it was good to pair the story back and really focus on Tatiana Maslany and the original Clone Club, I think they're also in the classic situation of being in that final season with getting by on reduced budget, so having to limit the locations, I'm enjoying it, but it also feels like it's not quite as dynamic as it has been in those previous seasons. Even much as I bemoaned the when it got overly complicated, at least there was sort of there was the ambition there, and it feels now like it's just sort of playing things out. And certainly with P.T. Barnum, I mean, I'm a little bit disappointed because Stephen McCaddy's been one of my favorite actors and is one of the great scenery chewers in genre television. And yes, I'm also personally biased because he appeared in a production of Taming of the Shrew with my father playing Petruchio, and got to enter the auditorium. Petruchio famously is supposed to be coming in on a horse, which you usually don't bring into a theater, but the director decided to bring him in on a dirt bike from the back of the auditorium down the sides and riding up onto the stage. And Stephen McCaddy pulling that off, stopping his bike and turning to smile at the audience, and he basically had them in the palm of their hand for the rest of the night. Immortal mad scientist he's playing is right now feeling a little too arch and not quite enough menace for me.
Yeah, I have a feeling like this series got so kind of out of its own control in the third and fourth season that this season has really been just trying to drag it back into some kind of conclusion. I'm impressed that they're doing an okay job with that, but I feel like, they have so much that they have to try and wrangle into something that is a sensible conclusion. And as you know, we're about halfway. I think it's only 10 episodes this season, right? Or am I mistaken?
I believe so. Yes. Yeah. It's that classic.
Yeah. So we're halfway through at least as far as what I've watched so far. And I'm worried that they're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see where this is going to end. So I'm getting a little concerned, but again, I've seen other shows where it was like, boy, there's only one or two episodes left, and then they absolutely nail it. So, let's give them the benefit of the doubt for right now, but I do feel like this was a show that kind of was a victim of its own success. They had to just keep making it more complicated. And as you said, like by the time you got to the third season and even the fourth season, it was like, do you even know what story you're telling anymore? Because they would give these big revelations and it never felt like it ended. There was always another part of it.
Yeah.
And another twist on it and another twist on it. And it's like, guys, there has to be one answer. You've set up that there's one, story you're telling here. So what is it? So, yeah, I'm hoping that they actually do come to a bit of a conclusion here that is satisfying. Now, there's another show out there right now that I think a lot of people are wondering, as it's now just about at its midpoint, are they going to be coming to a satisfying conclusion? And that would be the third season of Twin Peaks. I'm still staying on top of it. But I kind of noticed that I'm the only one that seems to be doing so.
I haven't given up. It's just that I've tried to casually watch an episode, and I can't. I have to really sit there and focus and have no distractions to try and grasp it, because I'll admit I'm having a hard time understanding at least a third of what's going on. So I really want to devote the time, and I haven't yet. So it's not that I'm giving up on it. I need about one more week before I can actually sit down and focus in on it, because as I've said, I feel some of it is just being done for shock value and other parts of it are important, and I can't tell the difference right now.
I do feel like they are kind of finally honing in on something here.
Okay.
But I have to admit, the most recent episode, not the one that's airing tonight as we record, but the previous one, just felt like spinning wheels at that point. It was almost felt like a mid-season recap just kind of like, okay, guys, you're the audience. Here's where we stand on things, just to remind you of the things that actually were plot points. And it was kind of a little disappointing for that to happen. I have to remind myself that this is an 18-part film, for all intent purposes, and we are knee-deep in the middle of Act 2. And the middle of the story is always really hard to pull off anyway. So it is slumping a little bit for me, which was unfortunate because it did take a week off after what was a really big episode that was very symbolic and not at all what people were expecting, and probably about as far into Eraserhead territory as he's gone with this. It was definitely something very different than you would see anywhere else, but it still made sense to me. But then it came back after a 2 week, wait to a very pedestrian episode. And it was like, oh, wow. you kind of challenged the audience and then you came back and spoon fed them. Bad idea. So right now it is feeling a little bit like, and I think that part of it is that I'm coming to terms with the fact that this is exactly the story that they, that it seemed like from the very beginning, which is the season long restoration of Cooper. unless I'm surprised by the fact that they do it a little bit earlier than that. It's on the trajectory for that to be essentially what the story is. So we'll find out. So yeah, that's where we're at right now. It's kind of, I'm hoping that they kind of return to form after, on the next episode that airs. But yeah, there is one in there, Gary, where it feels like David Lynch's homage to 2001, A Space Odyssey, Beyond the Infinite Sequence. I'm not kidding.
I am planning to catch up, but that just gives me more incentive.
It was, okay, so let me put it this way, okay? We watched that episode, and then a couple days, very next day was when the old TV went out, and then we went and, replaced it pretty quickly with the 4K TV, which, as I said, was an amazing value, by the way. I'm not lying. One of the first things we did was pop that episode back on. It's like, we got to see this in 4K. but it's definitely more on the quote-unquote avant-garde side. But at the same time, you get the sense of what they're trying to communicate. And it actually tells you a lot more when you kind of watch it the second or third time through. You kind of get, oh, yay, there's more here than I thought there was. But he was definitely going more Kubrick-esque in that episode. But yeah, it is. I think that there's still a lot of people who are devoted to this, but I can definitely tell that there are some people who were like, this isn't what I thought I was going to get with the return of the show. And they're kind of not sure what to make of it after it's now halfway through. And it's like, but we're still not getting what I remember from 1991. But yeah, I'm still enjoying it, but it did kind of disappoint me this most recent episode, unfortunately. Okay, so I think the last one on our list here that we haven't really talked about is the return for its final season of Turn. And Edmund, I see that you are enjoying it about as much as I am.
Yes,
it seems like almost we're in lockstep here.
Just about
pretty close. The one thing that just to start off a little with a little bit of amusement is that I'm glad Simcoe is back. But is it me, or does each episode does his voice get just a little higher? Because he started here where he usually is, and now he's kind of up here. I was like, "Whoa, what's going on with Simcoe?" Did he get hurt somewhere we didn't know about?
Yes, well, you know, he's lower down on the totem pole. He doesn't have quite as good a tailor as the other officers. So he might be getting a little pinched.
This is quite uncomfortable. I must torture you more now.
Yes.
He is still a remarkably fun villain.
Absolutely.
Reminded of the second episode of the season, The Black Hole of Calcutta, that diverged big time from the actual history for Simcoe, but was a fascinating episode when it came to showing just how far he can go. We've always known he's very amoral as a villain. That's what makes him so much fun. But boy, did he go even further this time! And that was a stunning example of a show going out or making a statement that they're going to go out on the final season on a high note. I've been enjoying it quite a bit. I think that there are a couple places where it drags a little bit, and you can definitely tell that they are working with a bit of a reduced budget this year. But I still think they are making about as much as they can out of this to try and bring the various meldings of fictional and non-fictional items into focus as they come to a close. I think that this is the, you know, almost the exact opposite of Orphan Black, where they had enough advance warning on turn that they had one final season to go to really craft a nicely paced finale.
Yes.
For this whole tale.
Yeah, so yeah, certainly it's been an interesting contrast between the two. Although they certainly, I think, I mean, just have the advantage of having this historical record to play off of, so that last season, where certainly given their ratings all along, I think they did go into it saying, okay, we're going to tell the story of Benedict Arnold, you know, up to his treason. So it was bringing it to a not a definitive end, but to certainly a good turning point in the story. And then once they got the renewal, were able to come back and say, okay, and now we just get to continue with his travails, trying to work on the other side, and not being trusted by anybody, and having, of course, our main characters, the Culper Ring, dead set on gaining their revenge for his traitorous activities, and at the same time, I mean, taking these the characters that they've been establishing over these three seasons, and taking them through through these final stages of the story in a much more cohesive way than Orphan Black has been able to, where at least where I'm up to so far, was rather intrigued at the twist of my namesake Edmund Hewlett returning. Nice to see Byrne Gorman again, and certainly given all that he knows from his previous stint, it is going to make things rather interesting for this undercover operation Abe has embarked on. But certainly some, I mean, just some of the set pieces they've been doing as well. I mean, the whole siege in the farmhouse. And even though it was just a relatively minor skirmish, but that little set to that that led to the death of Abe's father, I think the show has done a remarkable job of doing their research and trying to present the history and the tactics. It's something they've been pretty good at all along, but they're really using all that experience now in this final run.
Yeah, I really think that they are, and like you said, there are some pretty big moments here, including that twist, and I was really happy to see that. And just kind of go back to something that I said earlier in the week. I keep going back to the fact that the resolution that I'm watching this on now. Man, I've always loved the costuming on this show. Mm-hmm. And now I see it even more detail. It's even better. But that's just one of the joys of the show, is that they do such a nice job of the historical reenactment. Even if you know that some of the facts are very different from the historical record, it doesn't matter. They do a nice job of kind of dramatizing what happened back then. And although I do agree with some of the critics that say that if Woodhull were that really that blatantly obvious sometimes, the Culper Ring wouldn't have lasted a week.
Yes, so, well.
But hey, that's the way it goes. You gotta generate drama somehow. All right, so as we kind of get towards the end here, we do have a little bit of time left. Gary, unfortunately, I'm still a couple episodes away from the end of Iron Fist. I haven't been able to quite finish it yet, but
as I said, it does get better. So don't, if you feel like you're going to endure the same suffering as you did earlier, you won't.
No, it does seem to be improving a little bit, because they finally seem to be finding their voice a little bit here at the end, which it took them a little longer than it needed to, perhaps. But I have three episodes left, so I'm kind of looking forward to that before watching Defenders in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. As we record this, The Handmaid's Tale, I'm also a couple episodes away from the end of that, although mm-hmm. that is a far. I don't know if enjoying that is the way to say it. It's an incredibly good adaptation.
Yes.
And it's incredibly watchable, but man, do you just feel incredibly uncomfortable the entire time.
Indeed you do.
And for, you know, and it's good reason. I think it's one of those shows that people should almost be kind of compelled to watch in certain, which is kind of ironic. But did not get to Sense8 yet. It's still kind of towards the bottom of my binging list. Sorry. Although I did see the news that they are going to get a wrap up.
Yes.
I heard like a movie special kind of thing or something along those lines. Like, not in the theaters, but like maybe like, you know, a 2-hour movie or something to try and close it.
Mm-hmm. And intriguingly, I mean, this may just be wishful thinking on Lana Wachowski's part. The announcement did even seem to hint at, at least a 2-hour movie, and perhaps an acknowledgement of, the rather extraordinary fan mobilization that happened after the cancellation was announced. Perhaps hoping that, if there is a big enough response to the movie, there could be even more. And honestly, given the way this has played out so far, I have no problem with her hoping that or leaving open that possibility, because just the fact they've gotten this much back is rather extraordinary.
I'm going to disagree to this extent.
Yes,
they need to take this for the gift that it is.
Yes,
and bring it to as much of a conclusion as they can. Because that kind of thinking is exactly that. That's kind of like Rob Thomas type thinking with like the end of Veronica Mars and what they kind of played with iZombie this year, where they literally came out and basically said, hey, we know this could be the end, but we're going to put it on this huge cliffhanger in order to kind of, compel further, episodes. And it's like, guys, that almost never works.
Mm-hmm.
Infamously, Joss Whedon did the exact same thing and Angel got canceled. So, yeah, I would say that, guys, you went out on a cliffhanger of the second series here. It was not the best of ideas to do that, because you kind of played chicken and lost. You've got another opportunity to bring this to a conclusion. Yes, it's not the season that you probably needed to do that with, but take the 2 hours that you're being given. Bring it to a close as best you can. If there's more that comes after that, do it in a way that you could pick up if you had to. But
right.
Try, at least. Because, yeah, I can definitely, like, that kind of thinking, I can just see somebody sitting back and going, yeah, but let's leave it, let's pull an X-Files, reboot thing where we're only guaranteed these episodes, but let's go out on a cliffhanger. No, stop. one of the biggest things was that you were leaving everyone hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix literally cannot be the one blamed if they do it again.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. No, I mean, I do hope they take that approach. I mean, I just want to point out that, that's certainly, the way it was being, being looked at by some in the production teams.
Well, and I appreciate that. And in fact, I think that it's not an unreasonable conclusion to say that Netflix misunderstood the show's impact to a degree. I mean, numbers are what they are,
mm-hmm.
but
nine million an episode.
Yeah, but maybe they were less than willing than they possibly could or should have been to negotiate that. And maybe now, basically what Netflix is doing is saying, you want to show that you have support for this? Show up for the 2-hour movie.
Right. Absolutely.
If that gets crappy numbers, then guys, come on. No one's watching this. Everyone's saying it's great and that it needs to be there to be representation. But if no one watches the representation... It's kind of hollow.
And I mean, Netflix has, definitely has a count of every person that watched it, so they know exactly what the traffic is for it in the first place. It's not like you could say, oh, the ratings were skewed or something like that. It's, I would think, given their format, that everything is pretty available on who watched how much of each episode and so forth.
Yeah, I think that they've got some kind of accounting there, right? They've got to know. And quite frankly, the one part that, and I know that I mentioned this before, but the one part that I feel like, yes, people can point at Netflix and say, this is absolutely your own doing. They overextended themselves big time with the amount of programming that they got. They threw money at the wall. They threw it at the screen. They have a ton of original content. That's great. It changed their image. It brought people to the table. But they needed a huge return on investment to make that not a huge loss for them. And unfortunately, they are feeling it now. And there is an enormous amount of pressure from the shareholders, I'm sure, to get the spending under control. And this is the kind of stuff that they're doing. Now, what they're doing is they're being very draconian about it. And they're cutting anything that isn't getting over a certain threshold. As it turns out, the stuff that is the most kind of off the beaten path, non-mainstream stuff that people are really, giving them critical acclaim for is naturally the stuff that's going to have lesser an audience than, say, a completely mindless Adam Sandler film or very cheap to produce but kind of mass appeal stand-up comedy type stuff, right? I mean, yes. This is the stuff that usually gets cited as why are they funding this when they have this huge, you know, critical acclaim show over here that is unique. Well, yeah, it's unique, because, which means that less people watch it, and it's also ultra expensive. Mm-hmm. So I understand why they did it, but at the same time, Netflix put themselves in that position. They probably thought that they were going to get more money out of all these gambles that they were throwing out than they did, and yeah, now they are having to do what they're doing. Now, the last thing here on the list is 12 Monkeys, which I binged the third season.
Yes. As did I. Yes.
Wow. I think I'm just kind of looking at these numbers, and just from my perspective, it averaged a 9. So, not a big surprise. That show is definitely one of my favorites. I think sci-fi made a huge mistake releasing this in 3 chunks over a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a show that gets critical acclaim. Jeez, I mean, I guess I should thank them for the fact that they are giving us a 4th and final season, and well in advance, so that the writers knew that's what they were getting. Terry Metalis is putting together quite the story here at 12 Monkeys, and this season was very cohesive, told a straightforward story, as 12 Monkeys goes.
Yes.
but it's still, man, it was incredibly binge-watchable.
Yeah,
this was everything I wanted it to be. So.
Yeah, I will say yes. Since I keep forgetting about that spreadsheet. I did not get my scores in there. I would just say I did enjoy it a lot. I think my scores in some of the later episodes would be a little bit lower than yours. Because I did get a little annoyed at them relying so much on the trope of you have this close knit team, and yes, there have been conflicts with various people, but in terms of that sort of core group. Having so much of the plot revolve around, the two of them keeping secrets from the rest of the team, and sort of the revelation of that secrets, you know, then, you know, driving some of the conflicts towards the end, felt like a little bit of lazy writing, from a production team and writer's room that I expect more from. So that annoyed me a little bit, but it certainly didn't detract from my overall enjoyment of the season and the again, I mean, going back to the Orphan Black issues, you know, this show is, you know, the absolute mirror image in terms of taking these complex issues and time travel tropes and jumping back and forth, and certainly in this season, having these having these opponents, you know, who are more than willing to literally destroy versions of themselves to try and maintain the timeline they wish, but bringing all that together and doing it in a way that that did hold together in terms of understanding what was going on and driving this plot to save whichever version of the world you want to save. bringing it to a point that gives us room for this final season, but still managed to come up with decent resolutions for a plot that as always was remarkably complex.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing here that I think makes the difference with between Orphan Black and, say, 12 Monkeys is that I never got the sense that Orphan Black knew where they were going with things.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this show, I get every sense that they knew where they were going with things. Even if the execution sometimes, as you say, can be a little bit predictable or forced now and then. Sometimes I wonder if that's because they had to shorten their ambitions a little bit. But at the same time, the revelation at the end of the season makes all of that so much more ironic.
Yes.
Because everybody is operating on secrets that they were keeping from each other when those secrets were really just assumptions. And they were wrong.
Yes.
which is a really nice touch.
Yes.
Because I did feel like, okay, this is a very standard way to tell the story. It's cool that they're the parents and all this kind of stuff. But then for all of that to be a mistaken, you know, assumption really is a nice turn on things, especially when you learn the true identity of the witness and it takes you all the way back to the beginning of the first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, that was just a really nice touch. And it sets up a really good final season. I mean, this is a show that you can just tell the nice thing is that they've wrapped production, from what I understand, just recently.
Yes, I believe so.
So this show is in the can. Mm-hmm. They didn't lose anybody along the way. This show is going to be kind of end as intended. And, yeah, I'm just hoping that they can stick the landing, because they've really set up a hugely intricate time travel story that, quite frankly, in many respects, puts Steve Moffat to shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it actually hangs together really, really well. And that's over the course of 3 seasons now, that little minute details clearly were planned out ahead of time. And it's like, wow, this is one of those little shows that people completely overlook. And I really, it's a good one to end on this week, because this is one that people, yeah, there's 3 seasons, but go back, watch them. Yes. And watch the last season. This is a show that deserves your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And binging it might actually make it easier to follow.
Oh, absolutely. It's those shorter cable type seasons we were talking about the other day.
Exactly.
Easy to get through.
So, absolutely. It really is, because I managed to get through those 10 episodes pretty quick, because it invested me in the story. It was not a chore by any means. We're going to go ahead and end our week there. So once again, guys, thanks. I'm glad that we were able to come back from our hiatus and really get to kind of dig into some of these shows in a different way than we've done before. I think that this is continuing to fulfill the promise that we made, that we were going to be making some changes, that we're going to make it a little bit more engaging for us to have these conversations. So I hope that you enjoyed listening to it. Edmund, any last thoughts for this week?
I was just going to comment on the thing you just commented on. It's kind of nice having a chance to just talk about these shows more in general and the overall trend that they're moving in. Picking into the specific details that have really stood out for us. So it's a nice change of pace.
Gary, any last thoughts for you?
As a matter of fact, this was a great format over this week, because with the variety of shows, I wasn't looking forward to doing a checklist and having show facts blur between episodes. So, no, I think this was a really good choice this week.
Yeah, and I think that, as we continue forward, and especially as things get more crowded once the fall hits again, you may see more like this. I think that... I've mentioned before, yes, we are kind of scoring things in the background, but I don't think that's going to be the focus going forward. I think you've already noticed probably this is the first time we really never went back and did a retrospective over the last 12 months. And part of that was the hiatus that we did, which was a little unplanned, but also just kind of going back and looking at it. I don't feel like that's where the place that we're in right now. It's kind of an artifact of a different TV cycle that has passed on in its own way. And also, it's becoming increasingly difficult to compare and contrast over a 12-month period when it's just a constant rolling schedule. So it just makes more sense to capture things as they capture our attention and even look at, how are things going, not necessarily week to week, but also over time. So I think you'll continue to see the discussions going in this way a little bit more. Because I think it actually gives us more of an opportunity to dig in over, if we look at a couple episodes at a time or a few episodes at a time, even a season at a time, it really gives us an opportunity to also pay a little bit more attention just to our overall feeling of, is the show working? Is it not working? What is working? What's not? What we hope they do further in the season and so on. And instead of trying to, it allows us to actually have deeper conversations because we're not trying to remember or parse it out quite so much. Which is maybe a little bit counterintuitive, but quite frankly, I think we get more out of it ourselves this way. But that's it for this particular week. So hopefully we will be back in another week or two, depending on how our personal schedules allow for the summer. But that will again allow us to dig into things perhaps a little bit differently. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.